Last week we've covered chapter 10 of verse number 25.
One thing we must remember about these middle six chapters of the Gita, that is from chapter 7 to chapter 12. This middle section of the Gita is called the Upasana section. Upasana has two words. Upa means near and asana means sit. What it means is that to bring our mind as close as possible to God, to sit near God. Therefore, the obvious question would be to how can I constantly bring my mind to focus on Lord? And it is very easy when we are sitting in the temple, because when we are sitting at the altar, we can see the form of God, we can fix our mind on Him. Or when we are in the temple or we are going on a pilgrimage, it is easy to fix our mind on the Lord. But what we want to know is, how do we continuously fix our mind on the Lord? This is our problem. And what is the advantage? The more and more we can fix our mind on the Lord, the mind becomes purer. Pure thoughts also come out from the mind. The more we think of the Lord, the more we associate with the Lord, only pure thoughts will come into our mind. And thus, we will lead a dharmic life. And this is the same question which is on Arjuna's mind, which he asks Lord Krishna in verse number 17 of chapter 10. Same question, the same thoughts come to Arjuna's mind. He says in this verse, upon hearing that Lord has told him in the last few chapters that I am pervading this whole entire creation, I am everywhere in this creation, I am the material cause of this creation, I am the intelligence cause of this creation, therefore, in short, I am everywhere in creation. Upon hearing this, Arjuna now wants to know, since Lord, you are everywhere in the creation, keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, keshu keshu means in what aspects, give me some specific aspects, and bhaveshu meaning forms, any particular relevant forms, for what purpose, chintyosi bhagavan. So I can do chintam. Chintam means I can focus, I can fix my mind on you. That means meditation is not just sitting down, closing your eyes, and then everybody asks, what do you think of when you meditate? When I close my eyes, what am I supposed to think of? Here, we are being told a very practical aspect of meditation. Take anything glorious in the creation and use that to meditate on the Lord. You don't have to think, what should I meditate on? Anything you can meditate on. Anything that is glorious in the creation. So this is exactly what Arjuna wants. He wants specific examples that I can chintyosi bhagavan, I can concentrate and fix my mind on you constantly. And Arjuna expresses that he wants as many, he wants in detail many what we call glories in the creation that he can fix his mind on. But Krishna tells him in verse number 19, pradhanyantaha. In the third line of verse 19, you see pradhanyantaha. Meaning, I will not tell you in detail all my glories. Why? There is no end to my glories, isn't it? Wherever we can see, there are so many glories. There are endless glories of the Lord. What about our glories? We also have a lot of glories, isn't it? We claim, I am this, I am that, I am smart, I am intelligent, I am beautiful. What about our glories? They are also glories of the Lord only. Because Lord is manifesting in us. Therefore, never claim our glories to be our own. They are also Lord's glories also. So, he says, I will give you pradhanyanta. I will only give you the primary glories. Prime glories I will give you now. So, what is the very first glory he told Arjuna? Aham Atma Gudakesha in verse number 20. You don't have to look so far and search for all my glories. I am the Atma, the living consciousness which is within you. Aham Atma, he addresses Arjuna as Buddha Kesha, Gudaka Isha, one who has conquered sleep, meaning one who has conquered the tamasic tendencies in him, one who is alert, one who is awake to the spiritual path. So he says to that person who is awake on the spiritual path, Aham Atma, realize me as the very living consciousness within you. So the very fact that you are breathing, you can even meditate on your own breath, on the very aspect of the life in you. So that is a very intense form of meditation, because it's something we cannot visualize. Okay. So after that, he gives many examples. He goes on until verse 39, giving us 70 over examples. And always questions are asked whenever we go through this chapter, sir, why so many examples? You know, but if he give you two examples, what would you say? Why so few examples? Give me some more examples, no? So the question is, why so many examples? Because all of us are of a different nature. We all find different things in the creation that attracts us. Some like to see the sunrise, some like to see beautiful butterflies, some like to see flowers. We all have different aspects in nature that attract us. So here he's giving a very vast selection of the his glories in nature, so that you might find something appealing, you might find something else appealing. So whatever you find appealing, you hold on to that and use it to meditate on. And then he gives us more practical examples. Adhyat in verse number 21. Adhyatmanam aham Vishnur. Jyotisam Ravir Amshuman. I am the very sun, which is the most luminous thing in the sky. Ravir means sun. So among all the blazing things, among all the bright things in the morning sky, I am the sun. That means we can also use the sun to meditate on the Lord. Even when we are driving, even when we are walking, the thought of looking at the sun will immediately bring your mind to God. That is meditation. Meditation is basically thinking about God. That is meditation. And anything that reminds you of God is called meditation. You are in a meditative state. So first example he gives us also of the sun. Then he says, Vedanam Sama Vedosmi in verse number 22. Sama Veda is chanting. It's the most melodious among all the four Vedas. So the melodies of the Sama Veda are to be chanted, whereas the other Vedas are written in prose form. So the melodious chanting of the Sama Vedas is also a form of meditation. That means what? Even when you recite, supposing now we were chanting the chapter 15 of the Gita, that chapter 15 chanting is a form of meditation on the Lord. Why? Because the chanting reminds you of Lord. It brings your mind closer to the Lord. So chanting anything, any verses, any mantras is also a form of meditation on the Lord. And then he also doesn't forget those people who are materialistic, money-minded, whole day thinking about money, how to make more money. So he says, never mind, even for those people, if you love money, it is the love of your life. Not wife is the love of your life, but money is the love of your life. For even those people, I'll tell you how to meditate on me. And then he gives an example of Vitesho Raksha Raksham in verse number 23. Vitesha is the lord of wealth, the Kubera. So Kubera is a very hideous form. And people who worship wealth, they are presented to meditate on this hideous form. In fact, there is a temple in India also that is dedicated to Kubera, who is supposed to be in charge of all the, all the wealth, right? So people who want money, people who are worshipping money, they go to this temple to offer their prayers to Kubera to get more and more wealth. So he says, never mind, bring your mind to Kubera, keep thinking about Kubera. At the same time, when you are thinking of Kubera, you are also actually meditating on me. So for every different aspect of person, the mentality of a person, that's why businessmen like to worship what? Lakshmi. But by worshipping Lakshmi, at least even though they are asking for money, at least they are minimum, they are thinking about Lakshmi also, which is also another form of Lord also. So slowly, little by little, we bring our minds to Lord, whether we are Rajasic type, whether we are Tamasic type, or whether we are Sattvic type. And then he also gave us another example, Sena Ninam Aham Skandaha, verse 24. Skanda is Murugan, Kartikeya. So those who worship Murugan among all the commanders, because he was a commander of a big army. So even if you go to a temple, you see a form of Murugan, you meditate and you see the form and you sit down and you meditate on the form of Murugan, that also is a form of worship of the Lord. Therefore, whichever deity that you hold dear is ultimately a worship of the Lord also. And Sarasam Ashmi Sagara, among all the pools of water, I am the ocean. Meaning those also who stay near the ocean, they can sit down by the ocean side and just meditate on the ocean as the very glory of Lord. And that's why even if we can't go to the Ganges, because one example he gave us also was about the Ganges. He said, my glory is in the river Ganges. Even if we are not fortunate to go to the Ganges, even if we put a picture of the Ganges there or Himalayas, we can sit down and look at that form and meditate on the Lord. So there are many, many ways that we can meditate. So many examples, beautiful examples he's given us here. By telling us that his glory is a Himalaya. Himalayas also very sacred mountains. To meditate on Himalaya is meditating on God also. So now with that understanding, let us carry on looking at some more glories of the Lord. And as I said, different glories will appeal to different people. Whatever you find appealing, you hold on to that and use that to constantly meditate, meaning to constantly bring your mind to the Lord. So in verse number 26, and this meditation which we do on any object is a form of sadhana. It is one of the sadhanas. Like you go and do dhanam, you do charity, you go to temple, you chant your mantras, all those are sadhanas. Meditating on any aspect in creation is also one of the type of sadhanas also that help us to purify the mind. So what are the examples he gives us in verse number 26? Ashvata Sarva Vrikshana. Vriksha means trees. Among all the trees, there are so many types of trees in the world. Krishna says, among all the vrikshas, among all the trees, I am the Ashvata tree. And this Ashvata tree is known as the peepal tree in India. The peepal tree is very unique because it has got roots on top, it has got roots below, and its roots spread all over and over and over. Very large area this peepal tree grows. And what is so unique about this tree, in chapter 15, Krishna would give a commentary about this tree to say that this tree represents the world. So sacred is this tree. He uses this example of the Ashvata tree that represents the entire creation. And this word Ashvata also is very interesting. It has got three words in it. Ashvata. Sva means tomorrow. Sta means exists. So when you put swatha together, means what? That which exists tomorrow. In Sanskrit, when you put a in front of any word, it takes a totally opposite meaning. So if Shvata means that which exists tomorrow, Ashvata means what? That which doesn't exist tomorrow. And that is a beautiful depiction of the tree with the world, because why? Just like the world is constantly changing, nothing in the world will exist forever. At one point in time, everything will cease to exist. Similarly, this tree also is called Ashvata tree. That will not exist tomorrow. And this tree, why it is so revered? Because in Hinduism, this tree is said to be the abode of all the three trinities. Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu. All the three, Brahma, Shiva and Vishnu, are said to reside in this tree. That means again, if we have a picture of this tree in our altar or in our house, we can sit down and look at this tree and meditate as also a glory of the Lord also. And not only that, by circumambulating around the tree, it is like going, like propitiating all the three gods, Brahma, Vishnu and Shiva also. So it is said that of this tree, there is a prayer that the root is Brahma. The root of this tree represents Brahma. And this is exactly what Krishna would say in chapter 15. This is a very beautiful chapter. So the root is Brahma. Why the root is Brahma? Exactly. He is the creator. So the whole tree starts from the root. The root is the one that starts first and nourishes the tree and creates everything in the tree. So the root is Brahma. The middle, the trunk, is Vishnu. Because Vishnu is the sustainer. And then the top, that means the top part of the tree, the branches, etc., all form Shiva. So the whole tree represents the three trinities. And that's why this tree is called Vriksha Raja. It is the king of all the trees. And to such a tree, Krishna says, you can use this tree also as a form of meditation on me. Then the next example he gives, Devarshinam Narada. So earlier he mentioned Maharishi was Bhrigu. You remember the story of Bhrigu, who was called Maharishi. Now he's talking about Devarishi. So Devarishi is different. Devarishi now is a celestial rishi. And among all the celestial rishis, Krishna says, I am Narada. And you must have heard many, many stories in the Puranas and Upanishads about Narada, amount of mischief he plays. And by playing his mischief, of course, he tries to teach everybody a lesson, a moral lesson. And Narada is supposed to be one of the Chiranjeevis. He never dies. He goes on through all the four yugas. So in every yuga is there. And Narada has got the special capacity to go through heaven to hell to earth. He can go through all the three lokas. So meditation on Narada also is a form of meditation on the Lord also. And it was Narada who blessed Valmiki to write the Ramayana. As you all know the story, Valmiki was known as Ratnakara. He was a highway robber. Until he met Narada, then he changed his life. And Narada is the one who inspired him to write the Ramayana. Okay? So such a great, what you call, Deva Rishi is Narada. Among all the Rishis who are the Devas, Narada is the one to be meditated upon. Gandharvanam Chitraratha. Now, in the heaven, there are many colonies, right? So, where various Devas reside. There is one colony which is called Gandhar, where all the Gandharvas reside. And who are the Gandharvas and who are the people who worship the Gandharvas? In India, those academies which teach art, dancing, music, etc., they worship these Gandharvas because they are said to be the celestial musicians. So again, it appeals to those people who come from an art background, who go into classical dancing, singing, etc. They will know who is Gandharva. They are the celestial musicians. So similarly, through arts, through music, through dance also, when we worship the Gandharvas, it is a worship of the Lord. That's why there are so many examples given, because different people have different types of outlook in life, different hobbies in life, different work to do in life. So for those people who appreciate art, dancing, painting, etc., the Gandharvas are the said to be the very glory of the Lord. And who are the wives of the Gandharvas? They are called the Asparas. Asparas are the, what do you call them? Apsaras, who are the dancers. They are the very wives of the Gandharvas. In fact, when I was in Thailand, there was an academy called Apsara Dancing Academy. So even they believe in that Apsara also. They worship these celestial dancers also. And, yes.
Sorry, I'm going a bit back.
Yes.
You mentioned about Brahma, Vishnu,
Shiva.
Now, why is it that Brahma is worshipped
Worship. It's not worship. Again, there is a long story in the Puranas because I think he... what was the story? He challenged something. He told a lie or something like that. Was it the flower? Right. He lied. He told a lie. Right. And then he was thus cursed that he will not be worshipped as much as Brahma and Vishnu. I believe there's only one temple. Yes. Not only Thailand, in Bali also.
So there is a Brahma temple even somewhere in Bukit Tinggi.
Oh really? In Bukit Tinggi also?
It's a Buddhist temple, but it has an image of Brahma.
In fact, the Brahma image also is the shrine that was bombed by the terrorists recently.
Oh, yes, yes.
That had a Brahma shrine, a four-headed Brahma shrine also.
In Trichy also.
But of course, you don't find that many temples because there is a story in the Puranas of what he did. He was cursed and thus many people do not worship him, Brahma, as much as Vishnu and Shiva also.
Though he is known as the creator.
Also, he is known as the creator, yes. All right.
So this temple is Trichy temple. They have the people go there. They believe that you bring along your astrological chart, and then they say, give all your charts, and Lord Brahma is the one who writes all the whole story.
Okay.
You leave it to him, he can change.
Oh really?
And the people all believe that, and they all bring all the
charts and just leave it there, so that he can change your.
So believe, there's a belief.
Okay, so among all the Gandharvas, sorry, yes, yeah.
Like we don't want a birth after
birth. Oh, is it? We don't want another birth, so we don't pray to him. Even we don't pray to him, we'll also have another birth. It's true. I mean, what you say is correct. There are many stories there in the Puranas which are reason why Brahma is not worshipped. So, okay, this Gandharvas are also mentioned in the Mahabharata also. And in Ramayana. So among Gandharvas, I am the king of the Gandharvas who is known as Chitrarata. Chitrarata is the leader of all the Gandharvas. And Arjuna, if you read the story in the Mahabharata, he went to heaven to learn the form of dancing from Chitrarata. Because when he was in exile, he had to do something. Yeah. So he went there to learn dancing from Chitrarata. So that is another glory of the Lord. Siddhanam Kapilo Muni. Siddhas are those perfected individuals. The very perfected souls, we call them Siddhas. And among all the Siddhas, Krishna says, I'm Kapila Muni. Kapila Muni is credited with formulating the Samkhya philosophy. As you all know, there are six different, schools of Hinduism, right, in India. One is Advait, that is Dvait. One of that is called Samkhya. And the propounder of the Samkhya philosophy is no other than Kapila Muni. And he has written a very extensive book called the Samkhya Sutras, which explains his whole Samkhya philosophy. So chapter 2 of the Gita also is called Samkhya Yoga. Right? So there is some teachings from Kapila Muni which have been used also in Vedanta also. Okay? So that's why he said to be one of the great Siddhas. And who are Siddhas? So Siddhas are those who have supernatural powers. Those people also we call Siddhas. And how did they get the supernatural powers? In our scriptures it is said that there are five ways you can get supernatural powers. So if you want also you can get. How? One is there are certain precious gems. If you get hold of these gems, you hold them in your hand, you will also get supernatural powers. Meaning supernatural powers, meaning that you can levitate, right? You can produce things out from the air, etc., etc. All these supernatural powers. The other is called ausadam. Ausadam means there are particular herbs which are mentioned in the Vedas. By having these herbs, again, you can develop supernatural powers also. Third way is there are certain mantras given in the Vedas continuously chanting his mantras in thousands of repetitions, one can also gain supernatural powers. Fourth is by meditation. There are great sages who meditate and acquire such kind of supernatural powers. And the last is due to janma, due to your birth. Because you have done a lot of great deeds in your past life, that janma also can push you and give you a lot of supernatural powers. So we must understand siddhas, there are three types now. They are all called siddhas, but there are three types. One, siddha has supernatural powers, but he has no knowledge. He merely, you will find many of these kind of sages and saints there in India who can do all sorts of miracles. And by these miracles, they attract a very huge following also. Right? They are called siddhas. They have the supernatural powers, but they cannot impart any knowledge because they are devoid of knowledge. So they depend on supernatural powers to attract followers. Second type of siddhas, they have self-knowledge, but they have no siddhas. They only give knowledge. They don't do any, what you call, supernatural feats and all that. Like walking on fire, or what you call, standing on one leg for 2 weeks or 3 weeks like that. So they have knowledge, but they have no supernatural powers. The third type is who have both. They have knowledge, and they have also supernatural powers. Both they have. So of these three types, now, to have supernatural power, we must understand, is not a, what we call, it will not lead you to moksha. Although there are three types of siddhas, those who have supernatural powers are not going to attain moksha. Who is going to attain moksha among the three types of siddhas?
The one
who has knowledge. So that means the siddha who only has supernatural powers is not going to attain moksha. The siddha who has knowledge, and even though he doesn't have supernatural powers, he will attain moksha. And of course the third type who has both will also attain moksha. So it is only jnanam that will give you liberation. Supernatural powers will not give you liberation at all. And those who have jnanam with supernatural powers will therefore get liberation due to what? Due to jnanam. That's why you can see many rakshasas, demons, they had supernatural powers, but they did not have the knowledge. Right? They only, yeah, sorry.
So Sai Babas are siddhas.
All the perfected souls who have supernatural powers, and some of them also have knowledge also, they are siddhas. So Sai Baba will fall under a siddha because he has both. He has jnanam and he has supernatural powers also. So jnanam can only lead to liberation, not supernatural powers. And many rakshasas, as I said, they have all the supernatural powers, but they cannot get moksha because they don't have jnanam. And Kapila Muni is mentioned in Bhagavatam, and he is said to have both supernatural powers plus jnanam. So among all the siddhas, he is mentioned as the perfected one, Kapila Muni. And Krishna says, you can even meditate on Kapila Muni, he is also one of my glories also. Verse 27. Now verse 27, you will recall about the very famous story given in the Puranas, which is the churning of the Milky Ocean. Right? And that is called Samudra Mantam. And a very important lesson, you see, we sometimes hear all these stories, then we say, what a funny story, you know, such a thing can happen, you know, the devas come on side, asuras come on side, hold the snake fella and churn the mountain and get all this. What is the lesson we are supposed to learn, supposing from this? What is the moral of the story? You all know the story, right? No, the churning of the ocean. So what is the lesson we are supposed to learn?
The negative comes out first, and then finally the nectar was the good.
So that means what? Negative came first, and then came all the what we call the good things, right? And finally came the nectar.
But in ourselves, the immortality comes from within us. We have to turn ourselves, all the negative.
Correct. So that means to find the nectar is an effort that we have to put. And while we are putting that effort to reach that immortal self, just like the devas and the asuras put in that effort to get the nectar, but before they could get the nectar, there came many negative things. So if while we are on the spiritual path also, you will find that many negative things also do happen, many obstacles do come, many challenges do come. But if like the devas and asuras, they persisted through the negative challenges, through the obstacles, ultimately they got the amritam. So this is the lesson we have to learn through the churning of the ocean. That while you are trying to get the amritam, to reach that state of immortality, there will be many obstacles, there will be many challenges on your spiritual path. So you have to persevere. You must not be what we call give up or get defeated by this negative. At the same time, many good things also will come into your life. Okay? Then what are we supposed to do? These good things also can be a distraction. Money may come while you are on the spiritual path. You know, money might come, fame might come, honor might come, prestige will come. But all these are again distractions. Ultimately what we want? We want the amritam, we want the immortality. Therefore this negative and positive aspects are to be discarded and one must persevere and reach the final goal, which is amritam. That is a message that is being told in this story of the churning of the ocean, Samudra Mantram, where the devas and the asuras got together to churn, and they use, what was the name of the snake? Vasuki, yes, Vasuki snake, to churn the mountain. And when the mountain was sinking, then they called for the help of Kurma, who came, Vishnu, who came in the form of the Kurma, the tortoise, to balance the mountain on his back. So all the stories are there. Okay. And then from that came 14 varieties of churning, of 14 varieties of things came, some the devas took, some the asuras took. So we have to understand the symbolical message behind this, that the churning also means what? We are churning the mind. Right? You have to churn the mind. The ocean represents the mind which is being churned. And sometimes when we churn the mind, when we say churn the mind means use our thinking capacity, our effort, right? Churn the mind. So sometimes poisonous thoughts come out from the mind also. It's not necessary when you try to think of something, sometimes past bad events, hurtful events also come out, poisonous events come out. And sometimes good thoughts also come out. So just like the ocean is milky white, what it means is that we should churn out only good thoughts in our mind. Like the ocean is milky white, white represents sattvic, so we should constantly churn out good thoughts in our mind. So in this Gita class also, what are you doing? You are also doing a lot of churning. I hope it's happening. So a lot of churning is going on. Then you are thinking good thoughts, you are trying to absorb good thoughts. And just because of the churning, then finally you will get amritam if you persevere. Right? If you have that perseverance, you will finally get the amritam. So now, Krishna says, now he's talking about the very various things that came out from the churning of the ocean. He says, Uchrai Vasham Asvanam. Among all the horses, I am Uchravasam, which is a celestial white horse. So again, it is another glory of the Lord. We can also meditate on a picture of this celestial white horse as a form of the glory of the Lord also. Then what else? Airavatam Gajendranam. Among all the great elephants, I am Airavatam, which is again the white celestial elephant. And even in Thailand, he is called Erawat. If you go to Thailand, you'll see this white elephant being depicted is called, there's a whole park which is called Erawan National Park, dedicated to this white elephant. So there also they worship Erawan also. There's an Erawan shrine there also. So another thing that came out from the churning of this ocean is the mythological white elephant, who is the vehicle of Lord Indra. If you see Lord Indra sitting on an elephant, that white elephant is what you call Airavatam. Now again, there are two animals presented here. One was a horse, one was an elephant. Again, we must understand the allegory. is not just a horse is horse, elephant is elephant. What does the horse and elephant represent again? The horse is the fast moving, undisciplined, unsteel mind. And the elephant represents what? The slow thinking mind, not the fast reacting mind like the horse. So your mind can be of two types, either the very fast reacting horse or the slow thinking elephant. That means it depends on how we harness the power of the mind. Do we harness the quick reacting mind or the slow thinking mind also? As this came out from the churning of the ocean also. So mind has got both dharmic and adharmic qualities. It depends on us how we churn. Another glory of the Lord here, Naranam Naradipam. Naradipam means Naranam means among all men, I am Naradipam, which is the king of men. And who is the king of men? It is the king himself who rules all the subjects, who is the highest authority, and everybody bows down to the king in respect as the authority. Now, what is so special about the king? In those days, of course, the king had the authority or the power to reward his subjects or to give punishment. It was the authority of the king. Because there were no courts, no policemen and all that. It was the king who decided who to reward and who to punish. And another very important thing about the king is, at that time, they were supposed to be the protector of dharma. That's why kings were regarded as a very manifestation of God. Because they were the very protectors and upholders of dharma. And great kings we have seen in the scriptures like Janaka, Lord Rama, Yudhishthira and Mahabharata, they are all the kings who are revered because they protected dharma. And in Ramayana, there is a very nice example given by Lord Rama when he was in exile, and Bharat went to find him in the forest and tried to convince him to come back, and of course he didn't want to come back. And then Bharat asked him, how do I rule the kingdom? So he said, the advice that Lord Rama gave is that the king should be like the mouth of the body. So what does it mean? Very allegorical again. He said the king should be like the mouth of the body. Meaning what? What does the mouth do? Eats and eats and eats, isn't it? So why should the king be like the mouth of the body? The whole day is feeding himself on it. For nourishment of own body. The whole body. That means your own body you keep on nourishing. Right? That's what we are eating, we are nourishing. When we eat, we nourish only our body. So what he meant was that just like the king collects various taxes from the subjects, right? He collects the taxes, and what does he do? When you eat, the food which is digested goes to nourish all the various organs of the body. That means the king should be the one responsible to collect the tax and distribute the money accordingly to the subjects for their benefit. Because if we don't eat, what happens? The body breaks down, right? So the king is like the mouth. He collects the taxes, then he uses the taxes for the benefit of the people. When you only eat for yourself, what happens? You get unhealthy. So the allegory is, a king who only takes money and feeds himself is a very unhealthy king, because he does not give it back to the subjects. So that is the example Lord Rama gave to Bharat. This is how a king should not hoard wealth, but should benefit the subjects. And Krishna says, I am that Sattvic king, the one who benefits the subjects, who gives back, who protects dharma. That type of king to be meditated. So we can meditate on Yudhishthira, we can meditate on Lord Rama, we can meditate on, who is the other one? Janaka. Okay. Next verse 28. Ayudhanam aham vajram. Vajra is a weapon which is said to be like lightning, like thunderbolt, you know, like that. And this, it is the weapon of Lord Indra in the Puranas. And how was this weapon given to Lord Indra? It seems, the story goes that it was taken from the bones of Dadichi Marichi. There was a sage called Dadichi. Now, why did Dadichi? He did a lot of severe penance. So as a result of the penance, he got his bones were very, very firm and strong. So what happens when the Devas were battling with Asuras, they could not win them. They went to see God and God said, you go and see Dadichi. So Dadichi agreed to sacrifice his life. He said, I will kill myself. Then you take my bones, from my bones you make the Vajra weapon and you defeat the Asuras. So that means he sacrificed his life. And the gods then took his bone, made the Vajra weapon and they defeated the demons. So that's why Dadichi is said to be what we call among all the, what he says, among all the weapons, I am the Vajram, which came from the bones of Dadichi. Now the interesting fact is that right now in India's highest military award, it is called Paramvir Chakra. You would have heard about it. This on the Independence Day, it is given to all the soldiers who have given up their lives for the country. Paramvir Chakra, for gallantry. And the medal that is given to the soldiers, you know what's the symbol which is on the medal? It has the symbol of this Vajra. The symbol of Vajra is there to say that just like Dadichi sacrificed his life so the Devas could beat the Asuras, similarly the soldiers who sacrificed their life, they also have the symbol of the Vajra there given to them on the medal. So even to today, that is also respected as a very symbol of sacrifice. So Krishna says, I am the very Vajram among all the type of weapons. Denu nam ashmi kamadu. Denu nam means among all the type of cows that give milk. I am Kamaduk. Here Kamaduk refers to Kamadenu. And why is Kamadenu again separated out separately? Because all the other cows can only give you milk. Whereas Kamadenu, which also was one of the things that came out from the churning of the ocean, okay? Kamadenu belonged to sage Vashishta. And it seems that this Kamadenu could yield anything that you wanted. Whatever you want, you go to Kamadenu, he will also give you. So, Kama means desires. The word Kamadenu, Kama means desires. Denu means fulfiller. Fulfiller of your desires. And it's very symbolic again. What it means again, if your mind, if you know how to tap the resources of your mind, you can achieve what you want to achieve. So again, very symbolic. Kamadenu can provide you all your desires, meaning your mind, if you know how to tap it correctly, it can give you all the, you can reach all the goals of your life. So Krishna says, among all the cows, I am Kamadenu. Prajanas Chashmi Kandarpa. Kandarpa is the deity of desire. Okay? And desire is the greatest producer of every action. Whatever we do, it is motivated by some desire. And Krishna says, among all the desires, the greatest desire is to, of course, procreate. That's what he's talking about, the desire to procreate, to have children, etc. So desire itself, it is in fact, in the Vedas it is mentioned, it is a duty of parents to produce children. What type of children? Children that are, can contribute to society. It is a duty of every parent, not only to produce children, but to make sure you give them the right knowledge, the right education, the right foundation, so that they become assets in society, they contribute to society. So even here we must understand that desire is not looked down upon. If desire is used in the right way, if you remember the verse in chapter 7 verse 11, go back to chapter 7 verse 11, there Krishna mentioned about desire. Page 140. Page 140, chapter 7, verse 11. He says, I am desire which is not contrary to dharma. Any desire you have that is according to dharma, desire to pray, desire to go to temple, desire to give charity, desire to do good, desire to do seva, that is good desire. So Krishna says, where any desire arises in you that is not contrary to dharma, that is my very manifestation. So here again the same thing is saying that the desire to produce, to procreate, it is not a bad desire, but my glory is also there if you produce the right children and you educate them to serve society. So that also is a glory of the Lord. Sarpanam Ashmi Vasuki. You all know the story of Vasuki. That Vasuki, who is this Vasuki? Vasuki is said to be a poisonous serpent. And who is associated with Vasuki? Lord Shiva. Where does Lord Shiva put Vasuki? Around his neck. Why does he put him around his neck? Huh? Why not put him in a basket? Why put him around his neck? See, again, symbolic for us to understand. We go to temple, we see Lord Shiva with Vasuki around his neck. We say, okay, yes, Vasuki around his neck. So what is the meaning of it? Why put the Vasuki around your neck? Why not put him on your hand? What do ladies all wear around their neck? Garlands, ornaments, right? So Lord Shiva is wearing the snake as a garland, meaning what? As an ornament, meaning what? He has conquered ego, the greatest poison, which is the greatest barrier in our spiritual path. So the poisonous serpent represents the ego, and Lord Shiva, who has conquered his ego, he can happily wear the snake around as a ornament because he has conquered the ego. So very symbolic here. And this is the ego that causes us to be born again and again and again. So ego is the ultimate one to be destroyed. But Lord Shiva can handle the snake, he can handle the ego, so he wears it like an ornament. And similarly, we have to acquire knowledge. Why have we got to acquire knowledge? So then we know how to handle the ego also. That's why knowledge is so important. So, among all the poisonous snakes, Krishna says, I am Vasuki. Again, another aspect for us to meditate on. As we go to the temple, we have pictures of Lord Shiva with Vasuki around his neck. We can see that form and meditate also, which is another glory of the Lord. Verse 29, Naganam Ashmi Anantas. Now another type of snake. Earlier he talked about Vasuki. Now he talks about Nagas. Nagas also are type of serpents. And among all the Nagas, Krishna says, I am Anantas. So what is the difference between Nagas and different from Sarpas? What is the difference? Nagas are non-poisonous snakes, correct. Nagas are non-poisonous snakes. The sarpas are the poisonous snakes. So Nagas are the non-poisonous snakes, and Krishna says, among all the groups of non-poisonous snakes, I am Ananta. Who is Ananta? Associated with who?
Vishnu.
The one he sleeps on, that snake that is called Anantas. Shresha, also another name for him is Shreshana also. Now, this snake is Ananta. The word Ananta itself means endless. So Vishnu, who is endless, resides on the snake, which also is endless also. So this Ananta snake floats on the ocean, is endless. That's why Krishna says, among all the snakes, non-poisonous snakes, I am Ananta. Again, another point for us to meditate on. So don't just look at that picture of Vishnu. Vishnu reclining on a snake, we can also use that for meditation on the Lord also. Right? Many of us have this picture also. Varuno Yadasam Aham. Yadas are a group of water devatas. And we have many, many types of waters. We have a river, there is lake, there is pond. Even the cloud, there is one devata. You know what's his name? Yes, because there's water in the cloud, right? There is a devata in the cloud also, in charge of that water. He's called Parajanyo. So he is the one who delivers the rain down. Okay? So every type of water has got one devata. And here Krishna says, among all the water devatas, I am Varuno. Varuno is in charge of the largest pool of water, which is the ocean. He is the deity for the ocean, Varuna, who presides over the ocean. And Varuna Devata is worshipped by many people in the Vedic times in the evening. As part of the Sandhya Vandanam, they worship the water, the ocean also. Okay? So among all the water devatas, Krishna says, I am Varuna. Again, this form of Varuna is depicted in the temples. Also again acts as a form of meditation for us when we go to the temple. So don't just sit down in a temple and don't think anything. Look around. You will see various depictions of various devas, and you should question and ask yourself, what are all these? And once we understand, we can use it as a form of meditation and so on. Right? So temple is a beautiful place to meditate, because so many depictions of devas, you can choose anyone that appeals to you and meditate on that also. Pitrinam Aryama Asmi. In the what you call heavens again, there are many devatas. There's one called Pitra Loka. Pitra Loka is where all your ancestors reside. Okay? And when we offer, we do the Shradham and Tarpanam prayers, they go to the your ancestors which reside in the Pitra Loka. Now, how do you know? You say, I am doing my prayers to my ancestors. How do I know if my prayers reach my ancestors? So I don't know where they are. I don't know which part of heaven they are. So it is Aryama whom we offer. Aryama is the deity who will take your prayers and send it to Pitra Loka. So when we do Shradham and Tarpanam prayers, this deity Aryama is propitiated. So that whatever prayers we do for our ancestors are taken to the right place. So Aryama, and that's why when we do Shradham, the word Shradham means you must done with faith, Shraddha. That if you offer to Aryama, your prayers will be taken to the ancestors. So Krishna says, among all the Pitra Devas, there are many Pitra Devas, I am Aryama. Yama Samyamatam Aham. Samya Matam means among all those who give punishment. Okay? Among those who are the controllers who give punishment. Who is the biggest controller of them all? No other than Lord Yama, the god of death. And he is the greatest controller who will give you the punishment at the time of death. Nobody can escape his authority. So Lord Yama will punish according to your own karmas. He will allocate the punishment or rewards. Now, Yama, we must understand, many people fear Lord Yama. But he is not only associated with death, because in the Katha Upanishad, can you all hear me again? Can? In the Katha Upanishad, he is also mentioned in the Katha Upanishad, he gives knowledge to Nachiketas. So Lord Yama must not be only feared as a lord of death, he also must be recognized as a very highly realized soul who has knowledge also, right? So among all the controllers, Krishna says, I am Yama. Now Yama has got another meaning also. If you all have read the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, you will find that he gives five Yamas there. Yamas are the what we call the rules and regulations to live our life by. So what are the five Yamas? The values that we must follow in our life. One is Ahimsa, non-violence. That is one. Second is Satyam, tell the truth, speak the truth. Third is Asteya, which means non-stealing. Don't take away things that belong to other people. Fourth is Brahmacharya. Brahmacharya means self-control. Learn to discipline your senses. Brahmacharya. And the last is aparigraha. Aparigraha means minimize your possessions. Don't be greedy, don't acquire and acquire and acquire. Be content with what you have in life. So these are the five yamas, which are the disciplines that we must follow. And one who possesses this, Krishna says, one who has all these five qualities in him, that is also my glory. So where all these five qualities are present is also the what we call the glory of the Lord himself. Okay? So there are two ways to look at this verse. Verse number 30. Daityanam asmi Prahladas. And all of you know the story of Prahlad. He was a divine soul, but he was born in the family of demons. So daityas are the demons. His father Hiranyakashipu was a demon. And Prahlad was born into such a family. And the daityas, the demons, we must understand the where they came from also. There was a sage. The last button you want to close it on the right side. The right side. The one on the right. Just put it to zero. Okay. There is a sage in the scriptures, in the Puranas, who is called Kashyapa. Now Kashyapa had two wives. One is called Aditi. Aditi is the mother of all the devas. So all the devas came from this one wife called Aditi. And then the other wife is called Diti. From Diti, she is the mother of all the asuras. All the asuras came from her. So now, again there is an allegory behind it. You say the husband is one, had two wives. One wife gave birth to all the devas, one wife gave birth to all the asuras. So what are we supposed to learn from this? I'm not telling you a story just to entertain you. There is some lesson to be learned from this. What is the lesson? We are born with both qualities. That means what? Our mind has positive and negative qualities. It has both qualities. Same one mind, from one father came asuras and devas, right? From one mind, we can have negative or positive thoughts also. So, just from one father came two different types of beings. From one mind also, we can have two different types of thoughts also. So, Hiranyakashipu was the father of Prahlad. And generally, of course, asuras are all negative. But Prahlad was born into such a family and he was very sattvic. And now again another lesson, many people ask, why Prahlad, who was so divine, he had to take a birth in Asuri family? Now what again are we supposed to learn from this? I can't hear you. It doesn't matter which family you are born, that determines your character, but you yourself carry forward the character. That means if you are sattvic, it is not the family that will determine your character. So that's why, you know, we have this caste system. They say you are born in this family means you are any of that type of character, caste character. So if you are born in a low caste family, you are a low caste character. But here what we have to learn, it does not depend on which family you are born, it depends on you, the individual, whether you want to rise spiritually or whether you want to fall spiritually. So that's why such an example is given to us, that even though Prahlad was born in a demoniac family, yet he never succumbed to the negative type of life. Okay? And we also see another example in Ramayana, the three brothers, Vibhishan, Ravan and Kumbhakaran, all again born in the same family. Vibhishan was a sattvic one, he was born in a demoniac family, but yet he stood out among all the others also. So many examples are given like that in the scriptures. And among all the demons, that's why Krishna says, I am to be known as Prahlad. He is my glory. Another form of worship on the Lord also, to meditate on Him. In fact, Shakespeare gave a very nice saying, you know. He said, no, where are all the demons? We all think about his demons somewhere in hell, right? Right? But Shakespeare said, hell is empty. All the demons are here. The demons are not in hell. The demons are all inside us. Now look at Shakespeare. Thousands of years back, but very spiritual mind. Very simple saying. Hell is empty and all the devils are here. They are all there in our mind. Next glory of Lord. Verse 30. Kala kala yatam aham. Kala yatam means that which keeps count. I am kala, time. And time is something that never stops. How do we measure the beginning of creation? You say creation happened 70 million years ago. How do you measure that 70 million? With time. That means time has got to exist even before the creation. That's how we can keep track of the creation. Like we say, I was born on this date at this time. That means what? Time was already there before you were born. Right? So time is the most earliest thing that happened even before the whole creation came. And what does this time do? It keeps track of everything in creation. Everybody's action, everybody's punyam, everybody's papam. Time has been there, this kala has been there keeping track of everything. All your past janmas, whatever you have done, it is time that is keeping track of this. So Krishna says, among all the things that keeps time, I am kala. Kala in our scriptures is called Chitragupta. This kala here refers to Chitragupta. Now who is Chitragupta? Huh? If you see this picture of Lord Yama, then you one day you'll have to face him. Lord Yama will be sitting here, you'll be facing him. Standing next to Lord Yama will be Chitragupta with a book in hand. This book contains what? All the punyam and papam you've done is recorded in this book. So he is the one who's going to tell Lord Yama, hey, this fellow, you know, he attended only 50 Gita classes out of his. He didn't attend all the classes, you know. So this is called Chitragupta. And Chitragupta is a record of all the punyams and papams. So there is one day in the year when we worship Chitragupta. You know why? There is one day. It's set aside for the worship of Chitragupta. You know why we worship him? So when you go there, hopefully one, two pages, whatever wrong you've done, you will, you know, quickly turn away the page. So you say, Chitragupta, please, one of my papams, please forgive them, you know, put them aside. Only tell my good things in the end. So Krishna says, among all that keep time, I am Chitragupta. Because he keeps the most perfect record. He is the supercomputer. Right? Every action you've done, every thought, every deed you've done, every punyam papam is recorded by Chitragupta. And not only that, then he will also give you the appropriate result at the appropriate time. So such a fantastic record keeper is this Chitragupta. Verse number 30, third line, Mriganam Mrigendo Aham. Again, very simple thing in creation. The king of all animals, Mrigendo, I am the lion, I am Mriganam. Among animals, I am the king of animals, which refers to the lion. And lion is said to be the very glory of the Lord because we call him also the king of the jungle, right? That's what we call him. So even lion again can be meditated upon as a very glory of the Lord. Now, where is there shortage for us to meditate? People ask, what do I meditate on? So many examples giving you. Lion also you want, you can meditate on him. You have a picture of a lion, meditate on him. So everything there is a glory of the Lord. So many vibhutis are there. And in the temple also, you can see sometimes they have at the entrance lions there, statues of lions. Again, we can use this also to meditate. Some of the devas even sit on the lion or tiger. All these are form of meditation for us. Vaina Teyas Pakshina. Pakshi means birds, all types of birds. Krishna says, among all the winged creatures, I am Vainateya. Who is Vainateya? Garuda. Garuda is part human, part bird. It is a vehicle of Lord Vishnu. And there is a whole Upanishad on Garuda, which is called Garuda Upanishad. So whole Upanishad has been written on this beautiful bird. And there is a Purana which you are also familiar, it's called a Garuda Purana. Right, which is a dialogue between Garuda and Lord Vishnu also. So Lord says you can meditate on Garuda as my manifestation. That means also another thing, actually Garuda Puran also is read when people pass away. And when we go and listen to Garuda Puran, we are told about a lot of stories, beautiful stories about the Lord also. So listening to Garuda Puran is another form of meditation on the Lord. That's why I said at the beginning, meditation is not just sitting, closing your eyes and meditating. Even by listening to the glories of the Lord, itself is a form of meditation. Why? Because your mind is fixed on the Lord. So, Krishna says, Garuda is also my glory. Meditating on Garuda also is a form of meditation. And Garuda also has another meaning. Garuda also means the words we utter. Is also called Garuda. Okay? Now, what it means is that when we utter the words, Lord sits on these words. Okay? What happened? The words enter your ears. From your ears, they enter your mind and your heart. That means when spiritual words are spoken, Lord sits on these words and the words enter into your ears. And they enter into your heart, they reach your heart. So Garuda also means those kind of spiritual words that enter and make a difference in your life also. That is also another meaning of Garuda also. So he enters the ears of the disciple, and from the ears he enters to the heart of the devotee. Right? So even in divine words, wherever divine words are spoken, wherever mantras are chanted, it is the Lord himself who is sitting on these divine words and entering into your heart also. So listening to spiritual discourses increases our love for Lord. Verse 31. Another form of meditation, also listening to spiritual discourses. Pavana Pavatam Asmi. Pavatam, among all the purifiers. And there are many things that can purify, right? We have Ganga Jalam, a dip in the Ganga can purify us. But Krishna says, among all the purifiers, I am Pavana. Pavana here refers to Vayu, the wind. And wind has a special property to move everywhere. Unlike any other purifier, wind can move anywhere at once, right? And it can purify also. So, wind has got two properties. One, it can move everywhere. Second, it can move swiftly also. So, unlike other purifiers like fire or like Ganges water, wind can move everywhere and it can move swiftly and it can purify also. Now, that means another form of meditation has been given to us. What is that? What is he telling you when he talks about that? I am the among all the purifiers and the wind. When we breathe in and breathe out, that itself is the power of the Lord also. So by just concentrating on our breathing also is another form of meditation. Breathe in and breathe out. Soham. As you repeat the mantra, soham. That is another form, because that is the presence of the Lord in the wind that is going in and out of you also. So therefore, meditating on the breath also is another form of meditation. Then, the next glory of Lord, Rama Shastra Vritam Aham. Among all those who wield weapons, Shastra Vritam means those who wield weapons, I am Rama. Now, we see that all the devas in the temple, when you go there, devas are a form of compassion, isn't it? They are a form of love. But you find devas all the time holding weapons. So why do devas, they are an embodiment of love and compassion, why do they hold weapons? Some have bow and arrow, some have club, some have discus, chakra. Why do they hold weapons? To uphold dharma. Anybody who has to uphold dharma, like a soldier, kshatriya, has got to have a weapon. So that's why, don't ask why do God hold weapon, because they have to uphold dharma. In chapter 4, if you recall verse 7 and 8, what the Lord says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever there is a decline in dharma and there is an uprise in dharma, I have to come and enforce the law of dharma. So to enforce the law of dharma, you need a weapon. But first, the weapon is not used. First, gentle warning is given to you. Then if you don't listen to the warning, then comes the weapon. So the weapon is the ultimate to be used to enforce dharma. And both in Ramayana and Mahabharata, you find that the Lord came to use weapon to enforce dharma. Okay? Now, here Krishna says, among all the people who wield weapons, I am Rama. Now, there are two interpretations given. Some say this Rama is Lord Rama. But I am taking the other interpretation. Here Rama refers to not Lord Rama, but refers to Parusha Rama. Parusha Rama, who was the sixth avatar of Lord Vishnu. Now, why we say Parusha Rama? Because he is the one, you see the word Rama, Parush means Rama with a weapon. He had the axe and the weapon. So he was born with a weapon to enforce dharma. So Parusha Rama is also one of the seven Chiranjivis. You all know who are the seven Chiranjivis, right? Ashwatthama, Bali, Hanuman, Kripa, Vibhishan, Vyasa and Parusha Rama. So these are said to be the seven Chiranjivis. In every yuga, Parusha Rama is there to enforce dharma also. Right? And Parusha Rama appears very uniquely. He appears in the Ramayana and he appears in the Mahabharata. So that's why he's a Chiranjivi. He's continuously there. Okay? And he was granted a divine weapon and to use that to enforce dharma. And it is also written in our Puranas that at the end of the Kali Yuga, when Kalki comes, Kalki is the final avatar of the Lord, his instructor who teaches him how to use weapons is going to be Parusha Rama. So Parusha Rama is going to be the weapon instructor for Lord Kalki when he comes at the end of the Kali Yuga. So such a prestigious wielder of weapons is this Parusha Rama. And Krishna says, he is also my glory. So, six avatar of Lord Vishnu, we can also meditate on him also. Then he says, I'll give you this one, we will end with the last one. Jasanam Makaras Chashmi. Now, Makaras, Jasanam is among the aquatic creatures. I am Makara. Makara is called a sea dragon in our scriptures. Sometimes it's depicted as half animal, half human. So sometimes it will have the head of an elephant and the body of a fish. Again, if you go to temple, you can see this depiction there. Half animal, half human, you say. It's called Makara. Now, what is this Makara? He's generally found at the entrance of many temples. Okay? You will see a fish or a crocodile, that is Makara also. Now Makara is the Vahini or the vehicle of the goddess Ganga. So the Ganga Devi, she uses Makara as a vehicle. Okay? And the sea god Varuna also uses Makara as a vehicle. So Krishna says, among all the sea creatures, I am Makara. Again, we go to temple to see that it's a form of meditation on the Lord. And the last one here, Srotasam Ashmi Janavi. Srotasam means among all the rapidly flowing waters. That is Srotasam. I am Janavi. If you recall, I told you the story of Ganges. Why is Ganges called Janavi also? Last week I told a story, I don't know how many of you remember. She came out from the ears of Rishi Janu. So that's why she is called Janavi also. So Krishna says, among all the rivers of the world, I am Janavi also. Okay? So anyway, we will wish our time. So there are another 1, 2, 3, 4, another 10 more verses where more glories of the Lord are told. We will come back next week and discuss. Okay? We end with the prayer. Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Maradhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagadguru.